Let's try this. Right, hopefully this is recording. Let me just check. Yes, it is. Good afternoon. If you are in London right now, it's coming up? It's just gone 3 o'clock, I think. However, this is a global show and this goes out across the world. So if it's afternoon, good afternoon. If it's morning, good morning. And if it's anything else, then good evening and so on. So hello and thank you for joining us on the show today. Well, this is episode number 4. And I am joined by a very special guest whose name appeared in episode number 2 as somebody who was quite influential, not just on the career of my guest at the time, which was Mel, but also influential on my career and just saw more personally as well. He's been a big influence, whether he knew that or not. But today I am joined by Anders Powles. How are you, Anders?
Yeah, hi Simon. Thank you for bringing me on the show. Really nice being here and seeing how well you've developed over the last 5 years or so, I think it is by now.
Is it that long? It might be, though.
It could be 4 years or 5 years, I think, but it should be at least more than 3 years, yeah. For sure.
Feels like a lifetime,
yeah,
in a good way. In a good way. Anders and I have, as I say, he's been influential from a business perspective, and I'm fortunate enough to count him as a friend as well, and on a more sort of general note, and he agreed to come on the show and really share some pearls of wisdom, hopefully, and give the listeners, give us some background on where Anders is today in his professional life. And some of the steps, in his past that has enabled him to be successful in where he is today and has kind of led him to be where he is today. And so really we're going to talk a bit about that we're going to kind of dig into why you're here, essentially. So do you want to give the listeners, just a bit of background in terms of the company that you're working or that you founded today, what that company does, maybe just a bit of background, maybe just a bit of intro, and how you fit into that organization. That would be great.
Okay, well, it's pretty straightforward, really. I started my career in tech, not necessarily as a conscious choice because I love the tech industry. I just, to be honest with you, just ended up there. I went to school in Sweden, but got a scholarship to study in Brussels, and went to Brussels and did a engineering commercial degree, and ended up working for a tech company called Digital Equipment Corporation in the late 90s during the dot-com boom years. I work mainly in various types of business development functions in the context of their big scale service offering towards the IT companies that had multiple levels of architecture from different companies. So interfaced with everything from Cisco to Cabletron to the early giants in the IT industry. This was in the infancy when the internet was being rolled out, and it was a big boom. And I was in Belgium for almost 5 years, I think. And it's an interesting place. You meet a lot of people. It's a very global culture, and you bump into people from all walks of life, but also from all parts of the world. But it's also a very transient place, and at some point I decided to go back to Sweden, and I started to look for jobs. So this was right in the middle of the first dot-com boom, and there were a shortage of labor. You could almost walk into any company and get a job, for as long as it was in the IT industry. And I considered many of the younger companies, but ended up in the end, against all my beliefs and predictions, with Ericsson. Mm. I was really hesitant before I accepted the position, but it was certainly a very pivotal moment in life because I got into telecoms during the build-out year of the mobile industry, and it set me off on the path that I am today. Yeah, so I ended up with Ericsson and moved back to Sweden, thinking that I'll be in Sweden for probably a year or so before I would get out of the country and do something else, possibly the US or similar. But I ended up being in Ericsson for about 4 years, and it was really interesting years. Very defining time for Ericsson. It was tough years. I remember my my interview with my recruiting manager. He said, Anders, this is a really great place. You'll get to go to Harvard and you fly business class wherever you go, and you will have a nice expense account and you will learn a lot of things. 2 weeks into that journey, the doom and gloom hit the telecoms industry, and Ericsson started a downsizing program of some magnitude. Mm. I think when I joined, Ericsson had 109,000 employees. Mm-hmm. When I left in 2005, they had about 49,000.
Yeah. So my father was actually worked for Ericsson for about 10 years as well.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, he worked in the engineering department.
I think you told me actually.
Yeah, he ran a team. They were responsible for delivering the aerial and the battery pack of the T28, the first one, the first mobile phone that had the flip down thing. And a whole bunch of others. Yeah, me and my little bro, we used to run around with these brand new mobile phones, all Ericsson, and prototypes and all that.
We must have been one of the few in the block, then.
Yeah, so we used to get all sorts of prototypes coming through. Actually, that was going slightly off piece. That was one of mine and my brother's first business ventures together. Because by the end of that year, everyone in my school had an Ericsson phone.
Oh, wow. Impressive.
That's it. Sorry, we digress. Please,
no,
carry on.
No, but the life in Ericsson was tough, but it had many advantages. One of them being that you get to see the world, which has a lot of value, I think, when you're at a relatively young age. Mm-hmm. I think I was in Ericsson for, as I said, 4 years, and I probably have been traveling to 40, 45 different countries.
Wow.
I lived in various places like China, Nigeria, Singapore, Thailand, and a few other places. You get to see the world, you meet a lot of people, and you build your network, and you learn a lot of things. Ericsson as a culture is very very allowing and very trusting. So you get to play around with things that are pretty big, even though you are fairly young. So I had great years there, but there were also tough years with a lot of work and a lot of uncertainty, but very defining and very rewarding. There are some people who would stay in one company for the bulk of their life. Mm. I've never been one of those guys. I want to do new things after a while, and after about 4 years, I wanted to go abroad and permanently live in the US with Ericsson or so, but that wasn't really an offer, and I decided to follow one of my previous managers from Ericsson, a guy called Jared Delaney, to the UK and take up a role in a UK operator, where I ended up being for about 3 years. I worked in BT Global Services with the BT's ventures outside the UK, and also got my first real managerial experience of leading a fairly large team for my age, and gave me a lot of insights into people, behaviors, and how to really challenge a big scale organization, get your way through and find your way through different organizational blockers, but also it gave me some real hardcore sales experience.
I was going to say, these are commercial roles, right? You're talking about commercial roles now
for
this. And so that sounds like that was the bedrock. That's what
I ran the global Vodafone team in in NBT at the time.
Wow, okay.
And it was interesting. Obviously, you're working with a big player, which again is very rewarding and takes you into places that you wouldn't necessarily reach on your own. So the life in a big scale organization can be good, but it can also be very, very bad. And I think where Ericsson was an extremely allowing and empowering culture, BT is an old incumbent and with an heritage in a regulated industry. And I felt from the first day when I came to the company that this is not where I'm going to be staying. Mm-hmm. And I was probably, I really gave it a go, but I always felt that this is not the end game. And after about 3 years, got the opportunity to come with the same manager who brought me to BT, who shared my views of the culture, etc., to another company called Decision, where I got a really interesting role running and setting up a channel program on a global basis. And I made the jump, and it was a cutthroat culture and really hard driving. This was the first smallish scale private company that I was working for, with an ambition to basically either be divested of, sold, or possibly doing an IPO. And that sets the pace. And this was a company that had a great history. They had the first patents for SMS technology, and they were making money left, right, and center during many, many, many years.
Wow.
But I joined these guys when things started to get tough for the people providing those type of services, because WhatsApp and all kinds of new type of communications were emerging on the scene, and really what people started to use for free instead. Mm-hmm. I felt that the time I had in Decision was great, but I also nurtured an idea of doing something on my own. And I got the opportunity to be part of a startup back in Sweden, a startup with a really disruptive idea about creating a borderless world where people could use their devices like iPhones and tablets, etc., as if they were in their home network, regardless of where they were in the world. Obviously, people couldn't do that because of roaming charges and other problems. So we set up a company together with a couple of guys that I know since long time back, people with really impressive careers, and we came together. And in Sweden, I still lived in the UK at the time, but we built a team around an idea, and eventually started to grow the company, got the first big scale clients, and eventually in 2015 we sold the company.
Mm. So let's dig into that a little bit there, because you know, you've gone from being an employee essentially, and with you know, the comforts that come with a regular salary, and the constraints that come with a regular job, as in you've got guidelines and it's difficult to step outside of that. And so you went from that kind of environment to saying, well, you know what, you know, I'm gonna step into more of an entrepreneurial role. We're gonna found a company. How did you feel at that moment? Was there a certain, fear? Was there excitement? Was there like, oh my god, how am I gonna pay for like my mortgage or my rent, or was it just like, this is a no brainer, like it just will not fail? Like, what was the
Well, it wasn't a no brainer. I considered it for a long time before I made the jump. And I think probably if there is something that stands out, I had one perception of what it would be like and how easy it would be based on what I'd done in the past to be successful in this new venture. As you said, it was privately funded, and I had no idea what journey was ahead of me. I think in case I had known all the things I know about entrepreneurship and have experienced firsthand, I would never have made the jump. But obviously, it was the right call in the end, but not a given one.
So yeah, I guess if entrepreneurs knew what they were kind of getting themselves into, and or certain the trials and tribulations of what was about to happen to them, then most entrepreneurs wouldn't and get into it in the first place. So, but why? So what? Why? And so just for the, and for the purposes of the list for the listeners, what was the company called, and also a bit about the founder, like the people that you founded the company with, because presumably that took away a lot of the risk in your decision, because you're partnering with people that A, you respect, you trust, they bring a different skill set as well. So maybe talk us a bit about that. How important is it to choose your team, and you know, did that help reduce some of the risk essentially in your mind?
The I think the company is called Fog Mobile, as you said, Simon, and our promise to the world was that we would remove the boundaries for people who wanted to travel and use their data devices. So we had some really smart people in the company that had developed technology that enabled us to change the identity of a SIM card based on the country it visited. Mm-hmm. So we were able to circumvent roaming charges. The person behind the company, the founder of the company, was a guy called Carl Magnus Stenberg, who had a long-standing career in a big-scale operator called Tele2. Mm-hmm. He ran Tele2 Russia. The co-founder was a guy that had worked for the same group, industrial group back in Sweden called Kinnevik, a guy called Mattias Thompson. And together with myself, we were the founding partners of the company. We brought on board a really, 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 really strong team, amazing people who came together and basically managed to get the company afloat, as well as built the network and got the funding for the company, and then eventually, you know, took it further. So it was an interesting journey. And we took the company from being just a PowerPoint presentation with a lot of promises but very little reality into a company that eventually was moved to San Francisco and then sold to a company called GlobeTouch, where the chairman was the former CEO of Vodafone, and one of the financiers behind the company is a big guy in Silicon Valley called Ori Sassoon. Interesting journey, far from a given that it ended well, that it would end well, but in the end it all came together.
I remember the days, well, probably the year or months before the exit, and you and I, because you were supporting me on a business venture at the time, sure, which was the Pondip. The online angling platform. And but we, you know, we spent some time together just generally, and I remember some of the things you were telling me about, you know, what was going on prior to that, and you know, it can be sort of finance related, but like real stress, like real like hair pulling out, yeah, kind of like uncertainty.
Yeah, it gives it a certain edge when you put you've ended a promising career, you put all your money,
yeah,
into a company,
yeah,
and literally there is no suggestion that you would ever come out on the other side. Mm-hmm. And you go through an inspiring phase where everything is rosy, you're growing the company, you get your first investment, mm-hmm, but at some point in time reality kicks in and it's just hard. Mm-hmm. People are not the people that they thought that they would be, and it's just a lot of edge all the time. Yeah. You move between thinking that the world is great and you're going to be a billionaire in dollars, to thinking that whatever you've spent your time on for the last 4 years is going to end in nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it taught me a lot just listening to you, and it made me realize at that moment that, you know, for businesses of this scale to capitalize and exit a business of this size. It is all or nothing. Like, you're all in, 100%, financially, like mentally, emotionally, you're all in. And that was a real eye opener for me in terms of me building my business and having, you know, aspirations to build bigger businesses, that was a moment where I personally realized what it took or what it takes to build a company of that particular size. Yeah, it's amazing insight. You know, we talking to somebody that you can, you know, you've been there, you know, bought the t-shirt. You've done what a lot of entrepreneurs aspire to do, and it's really good. So thank you for sharing that story, and you know, it's interesting to see how that particular company will go on after the acquisition and what they do with your particular business. Why don't we move on, you know, from Fogg, because Fogg was a huge part of your life, and it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it has sort of spurred you on the particular direction that you're on now. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. Basically today I run an investment advisory boutique firm working with fundraising and light touch M&A in the broader tech sector. The reason why I ended up here was really that during the Fogg years, We started as a privately funded company, but then eventually we started to raise a lot of funds. And throughout our 4 years, we did a lot of fundraising.
Can you say how much you raised in total? Is that appropriate?
That would probably not be for wider consumption, but it was a significant amount of money, mm-hmm. in the tens of millions of dollars, mm-hmm. and above that. The money that we raised came from VCs, but it also came from strategic investors. At some stage, our biggest investor was a company called HP, that probably a lot of the listeners would recognize.
Packard,
Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah.
And I realized during that journey that after having done fundraising for a while, it was something that I was pretty okay at. And a lot of people approached me and asked for advice and introductions to various investors across the world. I realized that is a business in its own right. And I started to do it on a friendly basis almost, helping people out. But then I set up a company around it and found some more people to join me on that journey. And we're now running it as a company full time, helping people from across the world raise funds and realize their dreams.
So what's the company name? What's it called?
The company is called Willow Tree Capital.
Willow Tree Capital. Okay. Yeah. And who would be, you know, you've got, I know you get lots of different mandates that come through requesting for support from raising funds. What are the sort of typical types of businesses that you're working with today? Like, what's on your plate today?
Typically, the business that we work with, we wouldn't work with startups that are fresh to market. We would work with companies with more definition to their business, probably companies with... it's clear what business that they are in, or at least reasonably clear that there is a business around what they're doing. They would have some level of revenue generation, and they would have found their first clients. Probably we are also selectively working with companies that have fairly mature founders, possibly founders who have done an exit before, or at least been entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. of some significance. And we would raise funds around about, starting with capital requirements around 5 million, ranging up to maybe 60 million. And we would raise funds from everything from VCs to high net worth individuals, mm-hmm. to private offices across the world. So it's a business where we're marrying entrepreneurs or business owners with capital.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Fantastic. So how long has Willow Tree been around now then?
So Willow Tree has been around in its current form since about 2.5 years back. We have grown the company, we've got much more advanced clients and more advanced investors. We have a fairly big database of people that we can turn to for whatever purpose across the world in the domains of fundraising and M&A. Mm-hmm. We advise at any given point in time across the team, which is now about five people, plus people that we work with in as partners in different parts of the world, with across the team maybe 12 different clients at any given point in time. Mm-hmm. And it is a mix of clients who are looking for funds or might want to acquire another company or sell a part of their business, etc. Mm-hmm. And it's moving on very, very nicely, actually. And it's my, I like to think, my main occupation today.
Sure.
But in parallel, I'm working with so many tech companies that are also investment opportunities opening up. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a fair bit of early stage investment in the companies that we are we're talking to and that I come across. Not saying that I'm investing in every company that we work with, but some here and there for mm-hmm. sure.
And with that, do you have a particular type of business you're more comfortable investing in versus another? Or is it is it pure almost math based investment? Like, have you got where's your preference in terms of investment?
I think for me the founding team and the CEO of the company and the management team, mm-hmm. the maturity.
That's what you're looking for then. You're looking for really almost, to coin a phrase, sort of backing the jockey rather than the actual
exactly.
horse itself.
I think so too. Yeah. You develop a feeling for, when you meet people in this industry, whether they have the staying power, whether they are innovative enough to always find a way. Typical signs that I would look for is that, have they, since almost the inception of company, somehow managed to make money?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pondip was one of those companies. Mm-hmm. I knew that you would make it in some shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is it's a very defining skill, with very little being able to hustle themselves through the world and finding the big thing.
Yeah, it's stamina.
In this business, when it comes to investment, there are more failures than there are successes. And there are some, after a while, you develop what I call pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
You know what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
And founders that approach the task with more maturity, perseverance, and also are pragmatic tend to win over the ones that are headstrong and they know how to shape the world, they know what's best for everybody, etc. Also, of course, look at things like how much money are they spending, how are they living their life, and there is a stark resemblance between how you spend your life and how you run your company. I like to think that there will be people who are perhaps very, very cautious in their everyday life, and they're very cautious when it comes to how they run their company, and I think that's true. But you also see some people who spend a lot of money at home, and they're bound to spend a lot of money in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Look for people who are frugal and careful with money, and minding it very well, because you would be minding other people's money.
Of course. And are you taking that's sort of from a personal approach, or your personal investments or that you're making, but do you take a similar approach when you're, if you like, vetting or making a decision whether you want to work with a company through Widowtree or represent a company?
I mean, half of the success is really around Widowtree is really around selection.
Mm.
You need to select carefully who you're representing,
because you're probably in a position now where you're like the deal flow or the potential, the opportunities are there's an abundance of
them. Yeah, the world is certainly not short of people looking for money, mm-hmm. but it's really, really hard, and you need to have the right characteristics.
Sure.
And I think that people who have a lot of money or are managing other people's money, they can't just see it go away. Mm-hmm. It needs to come to something.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And understanding what makes a good entrepreneur is key, and I think cash management and the ability to make revenues quick is fundamental parts.
The old adage of cash is king, right? You've got to have money in the bank, and you've got to have money coming in from the business. It's remarkable the amount of people that build businesses, predicated on raising the next round. And I think we're in this much we're in a very different phase in the investment community from what I'm seeing, from what I'm hearing, in that it's much more about, is this actually going to be a profitable business versus, if we just throw a bunch more cash at it, can we get a few more users? Maybe those users will someday translate into money. It's very much like, is there a model and is it generating revenue today? There's definitely been a switch in the investment community, I believe.
I don't know if you're, I agree with you. The whole investment community is sobering up. When we looked at fintech businesses, when fintech really started, people were throwing money left, right, and center at anything that said fintech. I've seen investors following a big correction in the US and in other places becoming much, much more savvy. They know what KPIs to look for. They are really thoughtful before they make the investment, and the KPIs they would ask for would be much more advanced than what was the case before. Mm-hmm. People look for proof of concept, and people know what to look for exactly under the hood of the businesses. And I think that's a good thing because we want to see more businesses thrive and not money being just wasted.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where is all going to end? I don't know, but I'm sure there will be a new hype and there will be more money thrown after business ideas that are not great. But generally, I think that people are much more aware of the downside of investment that they might have been at some time before.
Yeah, I guess even more important to have that sort of diverse portfolio of businesses that
you're
sort of invested in.
Yeah.
Do you come across, we're getting ready to wrap this up, but I just one question sort of sprung to mind is, are you getting approached by many VR-based companies?
There are loads of them out there.
What's your opinion on that? Like, are you representing any, or would you?
We would definitely represent VR companies. We're not fixed on representing just one type of companies. Mm. It's got to be a VR company with the right characteristics that we can actually deliver value, given our network and the people that we have. We can bring people to, but I think the VR industry is a super interesting space, and it's going to be a lot of opportunities and great companies built there. Mm. We're not working with anybody at this point in time, but it's definitely a sector that we're looking closely at.
Do you have your own VR headset?
Not yet.
Amazing. Anders, it's been really, really fun having you on. As this particular venture or kind of project of mine is growing and it builds traction, it's been remarkable, even in this short period of time, the people that have taken interest and have taken part in the show. I always had in the back of my mind I was going to get you on. You didn't know this, but I always knew I was going to track you down. I just didn't think it would be this quickly. As your name kind of came up in the first or second interview that we did with Mel, it just felt quite fitting to kind of get you on board and have a bit of a chat with you. And so it's been really a lot of fun and really insightful. And you've uncovered things that I didn't know, particularly around kind of the Ericsson days and how pivotal that was. The people that you've ended up partnering with to found Fogg, and how important it is to choose the right team. To give you the best platform for success or the opportunity for success. So thank you for sharing that. It's been really insightful. Do you have any? I guess because we're going to have like listeners that are either entrepreneurs or business owners or have aspirations. Do you have kind of like one or two things that you would advise people to do if they're looking to get either switch from a career like an employed job? Or JOB, as my brother calls it, just above broke. JOB, looking to make a switch from a job to entrepreneurship or business owner. Have you got one or two practical tips that you can offer?
I'm a firm believer in the fact that I don't think that entrepreneurs are being born. I think anybody can become an entrepreneur, provided that you have the right characteristics. I think there are a lot of people out there that think they are the perfect entrepreneur, but try to get to know as much as possible about the journey ahead of you and make a judgment call as to whether you're the right character for it. I think there are a lot of people who've tried this journey and probably gone back to more of safe jobs and real jobs, as some people might say. But it's an amazing journey, but try to prepare yourselves as well as possible for it by speaking to people who are already there.
And how important is it to have an advisor or an advisory team? You know, do you consider that to be an important?
I think it's important to have an advisory team, but it's even more important to be open to taking advice.
Nice. Amazing. Well, let's wrap it up. Again, thank you very much for your time. And you know, thanks just on a more general note for the support that you've shown me in the previous businesses.
It's been a true pleasure, Sam. You know, I'm glad to see that you're thriving now.
I'm trying. It's all positive. It's all very, very good. So let's wrap it up there. And you know, if in the future you want to come back on the show and share some more pearls of wisdom, you know, I'd personally love that, and I'm sure our listeners would as well. So
great. Thank you for the opportunity, Simon.
Thank you. Guys, if you have enjoyed this, which I hope you have, and you want to tell your friends and your family and peers, yeah, please do go ahead and share it. You know, if you want to add a few comments or make a few notes at the bottom, please do. Love to hear from you. And wishing you a good rest of the day, and be lucky. Thanks. Bye.